And now, SCORE senior football analyst Hub Arkish on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Indeed, it's time for Hub Arkish, NFL analyst for The Score, and the Ubermacher for Pro Football Weekly and their podcast you can find on Patreon. Welcome back to the show, Hub. How are you?
I'm good, Steve. How you doing?
Doing good. He joins me on the guest hotline presented by Circus Sports Illinois. And just an update on something from before. Tony Andracki and I are talking about Carl Edwards Jr., and he's opted out of his Cubs contract. Just when Tony's talking and we're talking, well, could he make it? Could he be there? Well, yeah, he could. No, he couldn't. He opted out of his deal. He had a good spring. See you later. There you go. Bye-bye. Whatever happened. So much for that. So what did you think of Caleb Williams' pro day and his run through the media car wash afterwards?
Well, you know, I think it was pretty much, you know, as expected. You know, you're not going to learn more watching him throw to some teammates and some guys he hasn't played a lot with, as opposed to just watching the tape of all his years in school. It's more about teams, you know, getting to watch him with the other players. It's about getting to visit with him in person, even if it's only for a couple of minutes. And it's just, it's a continuing, you know, trying to learn more. What really matters for the Bears is, you know, this week or whenever it is, it's the coming week, when he comes to town and he has his in-house workout with them and they really spend time together. And that's when they'll get the best feel. They'll also see, you know, how he connects with whoever happens to be in the facility at the time that he's there. So, you know, this week was another step forward. I think they definitely learned a lot more. I thought it was interesting that they spent, you know, personal time with him twice before the pro day. But at the end of the day, you know, we know he's a good football player. That's not the question. What you have to learn more about if you're going to use the number one overall pick on the draft is to make sure that everything else is okay. And it's a lot of these questions about, you know, his family's involvement, the off-the-field stuff, whether he wants to really be here or not. I think they've done away with that question. But for the most part, you know, I think that they accomplished exactly what they hoped to. And, you know, now they're going to look at the other quarterbacks. They're going to go to their pro days, too, because, you know, there's still all kinds of options with that pick.
Hub Arkish is my guest, senior NFL analyst for The Score. We're talking Bears here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I'm Steve Rosenblum. So, as far as interacting with old teammates and new teammates, Keenan Allen was there. He showed up. Hey, yeah, I'm still in L.A. Here we go. And Caleb Williams says, all right, 115 catches, 1,375 yards, 12 tutties for you next year. Well, I like that. I mean, Keenan Allen's got to like that, right? Is that – that can't hurt if that's what the quarterback presumptive number one pick is saying.
Yeah, I thought that was one of the more interesting parts of the whole pro day was Allen showing up and the fact that him and Williams had met and him going out. You know, you've probably heard he also went on his way to meet Williams' parents. You know, that is an exciting move. It's interesting. You know, he is 31, going to be 32 years old, and, you know, that is considered getting near the end in the NFL. But he is coming off his best season in the league, and he is a legit Pro Bowl receiver to put with DJ Moore, who should have been a Pro Bowl receiver this year. And I still think they're going to draft one high. So, you know, what they are clearly doing is getting this team, this offense ready for whoever the next quarterback is. And, you know, you got the number one pick, and Williams is, everybody agrees, the number one rated guy. So that's why there's so much focus on that. But, you know, you're probably getting tired of hearing me say the same thing every Saturday. We've got four more weeks now. You know, there's a lot more still going to happen, and we're going to learn more about these guys. But I think the Bears would tell you that they had a good week. You know, they accomplished what they want to with him. And I think, you know, from the people I've talked to with the team, they were just impressed with the way he carried himself and handled himself in California this week.
I thought so, too. I thought he did very well. And even if some people and especially if some people want to say, well, you know what? He was told to act that way. It was an act. That's not really the way he is. And it shows he can take coaching. That's a good sign too, if you can get him to do that. But I think watching his teammates, USC teammates, when he's at the World Series at the workout, and I've not seen a lot of pro days. I want to call on your experience. That looked pretty loose. They were having fun. That looked like a wonderful relationship of guys wanting to play and play with each other. How did that compare with other pro days you've seen?
That's not unusual. I mean, you know, these guys, they are working you know, with a bunch of, you know, 32 possible new bosses, and they're trying to impress everybody. Mm-hmm. Obviously, these kids all have one team that would be their first choice, but they just want to end up in the league. And so, you know, I think it was, it's a pretty normal system. It's more about, it is about watching these kids play football. There's no question about that, but that's not nearly as important as what you can see on all the tape. It's just, again, it's more about the personal time with these young men and really getting to know them. And, you know, guys, the thing that is so interesting with Williams is I don't think – I have nothing negative to say about his dad or his family or you know, I don't think he's a bad guy. He's trying to take care of his son. They're trying to do everything right. But he has been too involved in this up until now, particularly when we know that the young man still doesn't have an agent. And I do think he's gotten quieter. There was not a lot of talk about him, you know, during the pro day, and they've got to get the conversation away from that, and the Bears have to get comfortable that there isn't going to be someone else impacting, you know, Williams if they take him besides them, besides their coaches.
A Justin Fields stan at my Trader Joe's was telling me that it was LeVar Ball all over again. I said, no, he's not nearly as loud. He's not nearly as invasive. And by the way, LeVar Ball's kids can play. So all you want is the quarterback to be the quarterback that the Bears have never had. And I don't see any comparison with that, with LeVar Ball. I think he's far quieter. And as you say, he's receding a bit. I would have, you know, if I were a parent, I'd have shown up to my kids' pro day too, just to be there. So I can't draw any conclusions based on that. And although the question about who's going to talk to the Bears on his behalf, it better be somebody. We saw what happened when Roquan Smith did it himself, and that created an ugly standoff. So I don't know where that goes. Where do you think it goes?
Well, I don't understand why he doesn't have an agent yet. That's one of the things that is bothering me a little bit about this. It's the off-the-field stuff. But it's crazy not to have an agent yet. And by the way, since you know you're going to be the number one pick, whether it's with the Bears or somebody else, you should have the best agent in the business, or at least one of the, you know, two or three or four. And the fact that he doesn't, and the fact that his dad, you know, is clearly trying to control this, that could be a little concerning. It doesn't mean he's wrong. Again, nothing negative to say about the dad either. He's trying to take care of the son. You know, he's trying to mm-hmm. do the best he can for him. And now whether he's doing it the right way or not, that's a different question. But I haven't met the man personally, so I can't say that he's wrong. I just know that it makes it a little more complicated for the Bears to sort out, you know, whether he is the right guy or not.
I want to get your thoughts on something. I had about an hour ago when I started the show, I was talking about something that you don't know until you know. You can't imagine it. And Caleb Williams has never gone through a situation where the spotlight is with the white hot intensity of a supernova. When you're the quarterback of the Bears, especially the way he will come in, he is going to be the most important person in the city. Not so in LA. USC football certainly isn't number one out there. And when you fail out there, when you throw three interceptions about Notre Dame, it's like, all right, let's move on. We have the Lakers playing. There's always something else to do. There's another pilot to develop. There's another show on another platform. There's traffic to get caught up. It's different here. We saw what happened when the craziness of Mitch Trubisky shutting off all the televisions. How would the Bears, I don't believe, will know until they know, and same with Caleb Williams. How, if any way, can you imagine, can you see dealing with that, finding out what Caleb Williams' tolerance is or ability to handle, be tough in that kind of situation when the bad games come and you are under that kind of scrutiny and criticism?
You know, it's interesting, Steve, but I think the answer is that we probably just learned that because that's the kind of season he had this past season. You know, he did not play his best football in their five biggest games. And that's what's, you know, created some of the questions about him. But he's bounced back. He's reacted to it well. You know, the big city stuff of Chicago and, you know, California. He grew up in Washington. You know, it may not be as big in size and, you know, number of people who live there, but it's certainly, you know, one of the biggest, most popular, most talked about cities in the country. So, you know, he's grown up with all that. And I think that they're probably, you know, okay with it. I think that he's done a really good job in the last 2 weeks. I was disappointed at his not being willing to see the doctors at the combine. I thought that was silly. But everything else he's done other than that, I think has helped him, you know, more than hurt him or more than created these new questions. And I don't think there's any concern about the market. I you know, Chicago and Los Angeles and, or California, you know, are obviously very different, but they're also very similar in terms of there being such big cities with so many options and so many things going on. And same with Washington. So I think he's already, you know, or Washington, D.C., I guess I should say. I think he's already been through a lot of that. And, you know, that's not, I don't think, one of the things that they're worried about.
I don't know if they are or they aren't. I just notice it's a big difference in the way you are, the big difference in way failure would get played here compared to L.A. Let me ask you something about Ryan Poles, the general manager in charge of making the decision at number 9. Do we know enough about his draft history, his draft style, to know whether he would draft absolutely the bluest player at number 9 or make a draft based on a blue player that fit a position of need?
Well, I think we like what we've learned of him so far, but it's still early in the process. He's only basically managed, if you will, a couple drafts, and he seems to have done fairly well in adding talent. So I think that it depends on where you're at in what we keep talking about is this rebuild. And you know, the last 2 years were pretty much, it took a whole year first to tear it down. It then took a first year to start to add new talent. This is the first time he's going into a draft thinking if he gets two or three of the right guys, they could be a contender this year. And so I think from what we've seen of him, and he's told us this, his main interest is just the best football player, regardless of the position or personality or any of that, although, you know, the personality with the mental aspect is important. So, yeah, I'm pretty confident that Poles has a clear plan for this. I've said it, we've talked about it, I think they're crazy not to trade the pick. I just think you can get so much more by trading it than by taking a risk on one quarterback at number 1. That's what I'd like to see him do, and we don't know yet whether he will or not. We're getting to about the time where they should if they're going to. I think part of his problem right now is if he is thinking about trading that pick, is that they still don't know enough about the next two or three quarterbacks to figure out what they're going to do, because they're going to take a quarterback in the first round. But if they trade that number 1 pick and they get two or three ones and a 2 and a 3 for it, that's the kind of guy Poles is. That's what he showed us last year with the move that he made, and that move turned out to be great.
They are at least doing their due diligence. They're going to all of the important quarterback pro days. At least that's the last report I saw. They're not blowing those off. They're going to be there. So they're doing it the right way, as you were talking about. That's part of the research, part of the work they have to do, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, again, what they have right now is that number 1 pick, and we know what the value of that is. You want to make sure that you get the most out of it. And, you know, just because fans, media, and, you know, some coaches and teams have been talking about Williams for a couple of years, that doesn't automatically make him the best quarterback over the other 4, 5, or 6 guys. As a matter of fact, I don't like talking about this on the air just because it goes the wrong way and for the wrong reason. I don't think he's going to be the best of these 5 or 6 quarterbacks. I think the best NFL franchise quarterback prospect in this group is J.J. McCarthy. And everybody immediately says, oh, Hub went to Michigan, he's biased. That couldn't have any less to do with it. I mean, I've seen more bad quarterbacks in Michigan than good ones. And you know, it's not that. It's in watching and studying McCarthy, and it's about knowing the kind of work he's been doing and the help that he's getting and the people that he's working with. And then if you watch the tape, if you go back and watch, pick any games you want, watch him. He makes the plays to win games. He is as good a fourth quarter quarterback as you're going to see coming out of college football. And we heard, you know, Flus talk about how important that is. And I just, when I watch McCarthy play, I feel like I'm watching Mahomes or watching Tom Brady. And so, you know, I'm probably wrong. I mean, I'm no better than anybody else who makes these picks, but I'm just not locked into Williams as number 1. And when I see how much they could get for it, that's why I would like to see him trade the pick. But it's nothing against Caleb Williams. It's just a question of, is he going to be the best of these 5 or 6 guys? And from watching all the tape, that's not what I'm seeing so far.
You know, that's the weird thing about where we are right now. Well, if you traded Justin Fields and you got rid of him, then it has to be Caleb Williams. And there seems to be such a binary situation. instead of, like you said, who's the best pro quarterback in this group that the Bears are going from which the Bears are going to choose. And that's what I've tried to make that point in discussion with people, that I don't need them to take Caleb Williams. I need them to take the right guy. I need them to take the quarterback. I need them to take a 10-year starter. And that's what I'd want to see. And I don't know how to judge if they're up to that or not. We won't know until this guy grows into it or doesn't.
We've been basing so much on questionable, I don't want to call it bad information, but that's been the problem of this whole discussion, for the last month or two or three. If you say you like Jaden Daniels more than, Caleb Williams, it's not because there's anything wrong with Caleb Williams. It's because you think Daniels is a really good football player. And in answer to your last question, what we know most about Poles is he's got to get the most he can out of the assets and the picks that he has, and that's what this is about. And you know what? It's quite possible there's two or three franchise quarterbacks in this draft, who could all be contending for Pro Bowls in another two or three years. So it's a good spot to be in, and it's going to be fun to continue to debate it and talk about it. But unlike us, the one thing I'd like to settle, if you don't mind, Steve, is the whole Justin Fields thing, because it is over with the Bears now. And people still complaining, they made a mistake and they screwed it up and this and that. When all they could get for him was a conditional 6th-round pick from any one of the other 31 teams in the NFL, what that tells you is that there was no other team in the NFL that thinks he's a starting quarterback in the NFL. And that's why they decided to move on from Justin Fields. What we learned in that, and I know Ryan Poles, I believe him when he said he wanted to do right by him. And he may have taken a little less in a deal, but he didn't go from getting the two or three that they thought they were going to get for him to a 6, maybe a 4 if they're lucky, just because he's a good guy. That's not, he wouldn't keep his job if he did things like that. So the entire NFL has now told, other than the Steelers, have now told us that they don't think he's a starting quarterback either. And even with the Steelers, they signed Russell Wilson first, and Russell Wilson is going to be the starter. So I feel bad for him. He's such a good kid, and he is a great athlete. He just has not shown yet that he's an NFL passer, and there's nobody in the league who disagrees with the Bears about that, apparently.
Moving right along. Hub, I appreciate your time. Have a good weekend. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Hub Arkush, senior NFL analyst for The Score and the Ubermacher of Pro Football Weekly. I'm going to take a break. When we come back, you know what? We're going to talk about the 3 technique. Les will help us, but we're going to talk about the 3 technique, the Bears 3 technique. I think we need to talk about that, and we will. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Saturday Suckage, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
So let's talk about the 3 technique.
A 3 technique. It's something. It's a newer type of situation.
Yeah, it's not that new. Thanks, Grobber, but it's not that new. Okay. Justin Jones was let go by the Bears and signed with Luke Getsy's Raiders. Jones was the starter in the most important position in Matt Eberflus's defense. The Bears have not spent the offseason bringing in the Keenan Allen of three techniques to add to a young defensive tackle group that includes last year's second-round pick Jarvon Dexter and third-round pick Zach Pickens. Dexter is the point of this segment, and perhaps the reason Ryan Poles hasn't brought in, well, the stud wasn't necessarily available, hasn't brought him in. They didn't want to spend the money. They thought Poles was saying at the end of the year that Dexter had a normal rookie season, meaning he started quietly, found his way, came on strong at the end of the year. Quote, as the season went along, you saw him get better and better, Poles said. He started to affect the quarterback more. Poles continued, he started to affect the run more, so I really like his growth process, and I'm really excited for this whole team, but for those young guys to take the next step next year. They're going to put the work in this summer and come back even better than a year ago. Let's go look at a year ago. A year ago, Poles was in the middle of deciding whether to use a number one pick on a quarterback or defensive tackle Jalen Carter. Right? Remember that? Hi. How you go? Well, we know what Poles did. Hello, DJ Moore. And more. And more and more and more. And Poles traded out of the number one spot. Still had another shot at Carter at number nine. Poles traded back one more spot, took Darnell Wright, traded out of the option to draft the guy who soiled the bed at private workout, couldn't even finish his own private workout, and was part of a car racing incident that killed a teammate. There was no accounting for whether the Bulls thought or the Bears thought that their locker room could handle what potential mess there was with Jalen Carter. The Bears passed on Carter twice. And then in the second round, Poles drafted Jarvon Dexter. Third round, Zach Pickens. Dexter started flashing as the season progressed. And there are numbers that back up Poles' contention about the improvement, specifically Dexter's improvement. You can't help use... But you can't help but use Carter as a comp. That's the guy. Bears didn't draft him. And the way Carter started the season, a 42-yard scoop and score against the Cowboys, and he was just wreaking havoc in the interior. Nine tackles for loss, and he ranked second with six sacks. But... here's the but in that whole discussion. But in the last eight games, Jalen Carter had two sacks. In the last eight games, Jarvon Dexter had 2.5 sacks. In the last eight games, Carter had three tackles for loss. Dexter, zero tackles for loss. Ah, but in the last eight games, Jalen Carter managed two quarterback hits. In the last eight games, Dexter had nine quarterback hits, more than one a game in the last eight games. Carter didn't have a sack in the Eagles' disastrous playoff game against the Bucks. Baker Mayfield just tore apart Carter's magnificence. Carter had one solo tackle. And I think we're seeing the difference between a guy starting slow and a guy starting real fast and then fading. And then, I don't know, I'm not in the Eagles locker room. I don't know what happened with Jalen Carter, but not enough good stuff happened. But watching the growth of Jarvon Dexter now becomes a question. What did the Bears do? Could they draft three? Is there a three technique they want to draft? And interestingly, the guy Dexter appears to likely would replace Justin Jones. In Jones's last eight games, he had 3.5 sacks, which is one more than Dexter, and Dexter had more than Jalen Carter. He had nine quarterback hits, same as Jarvon Dexter, Justin Jones did. He had four tackles for loss. As I mentioned, Jarvon Dexter had no tackles for loss. But this, and this is a big but, I love big buts and I cannot lie. Dexter played only 220 snaps. He came up one sack short of Jones in the last eight games in only 220 snaps, while Jones compiled his numbers in 340 snaps, about 50% more. Justin Jones never played less than 60% of the Bears' defensive snaps in the last eight games, according to Pro Football Reference. Dexter never played more than 48%. So I don't know where Jervon Dexter goes now. I don't know where the Bears go with that position, as important as it is to Eberflus's defense. But compared to the guy the Bears passed on, and compared to the guy the Bears let go, Dexter's arrow seems to be pointing up more than the others at the three technique. And it's a newer kind of thing, according to Les, but it's an old question we've seen in Chicago because Tommy Harris did it, and that's what you're looking for, dominant wrecking force inside. Jervon Dexter seems to be headed to that, and maybe that makes one less spot Ryan Poles has to think about spending a high draft pick on, no matter what he does with a nine pick, whether he trades out of that or trades out of the first, the way Hub was saying. But Jervon Dexter, if you're talking three techniques and you're going to compare him to the guy they passed on, the dangerous, the perhaps uncontrollable Jalen Carter, Jervon Dexter had a better last half season than a guy who was drafted far higher. All right, take a break. When we come back, we just can't miss all the NCAA fun. Illinois wins, Northwestern wins, and the SEC sucks. So it's Saturday Suckage, and we'll discuss that. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
A three technique. It's something. It's a newer type of situation.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Suckage indeed. I'm Steve Rosenblum. Welcome and welcome back. Top of the hour. Talk with Ryan Horvath, co-host of BetMGM tonight. A whole bunch of games the whole weekend of NCAA sports betting. So we'll talk to him about that. And in keeping on brand with Suckage, 224 texture lets me know, Justin Jones signed with the Arizona Cardinals, which I knew when I was thinking of Christian Wilkins. While I said he signed with Luke Getsy's Raiders, and I'm just, Christian Wilkins was the guy I thought, wow, if that were the, if you didn't like your three technique, that's the guy to go anyway. That's a defensive tackle that you go anyways. So I suck. And 847 texter, I thought the three technique referred to the number of new stadium proposals the Bears made with none coming to fruition.
Three technique. It's something. It's a newer type of situation.
Yeah, and an old story of the Bears trying to play poker, and what you read in the Sun-Times today is a really good fairy tale. Not that the Sun-Times didn't report it accurately, but the Bears' idea is a fairy tale that seems to have been drummed up by Vice President, new Vice President in charge of Legos, Kevin Warren. All right, moving right along. NCAA, it's on now. It's on. It'll be forever. I love so much of this, not really the basketball, but the stories that come out of it. Illinois plays for a Sweet 16 spot tonight. They will play Duquesne. And Duquesne was the winner of the lame duck coach game because there was that. They beat Long Beach State. Long Beach State was the one where the coach was the fire. What? Long Beach, Duquesne beat.
Arizona beat Long Beach State.
There we go.
Duquesne beat BYU.
There we go. I don't know why I thought that was the case. Again, I suck. Thank you, Tyler. Anyways, oh my God. So bad. So Illinois is going to face Duquesne. Duquesne, hello, has won 16 of its last 19. That's good. Just to clarify, it's a good thing. And they're an 11 seed, which is all the rage in this tournament so far. Steve Greenberg of the Sun-Times was writing about what Illinois is going to face. And he said, of Duquesne, this team is all hands, disruption, and chaos at that end of the floor. And it's mighty confident that it can throw the Illini, who score in the mid-80s on average, for a loop. Said guard Kareem Rozier, keeping the game in the low 60s, that's what we do. Two of Duquesne's players, this is why I love the tournament, but not the game. I don't care if they play basketball, if they just bring me good stories. Two of Duquesne's players were on St. Peter's team. That St. Peter's team, yes, the 15th seed that went to the Elite Eight a couple years ago. I love that. And now here they are with Duquesne, which also has the retiring coach storyline. While Illinois has Brad Underwood's face turning into a fist every time they don't start right, and eventually they rip off their opponent's heads. Meanwhile, Northwestern won last night. Go you Cats. They needed overtime, but Cats upset Florida Atlantic 77-65 in overtime. In overtime, the Florida Atlantic was, it was clear. The strategy was, Boo-Boo-y's not going to beat us. And he didn't. Langbord did. That's what happened. That's all he did. Ryan Langbord beat. He scored 12 of his 27 points in overtime. And the Cats won by 12. You do the math or let Langbord do it. He's the one going to the Brainiac school. He's a graduate school. Do you know why he's here, Tyler? Do you know why he is at Northwestern?
Yeah, I saw on the broadcast yesterday, he is a graduate transfer from Princeton. And if I'm not mistaken, Princeton went to the Sweet 16 in last year's NCAA tournament.
Right. So why is he here from Princeton? That's the question.
Well, you got me on that one, Rosie. I'm not sure why he's here from Princeton.
Because the Ivy League has a rule that graduate students can't play. That's it. There's your Ivy League. Those wacky brainiacs have decided he can't play, and Northwestern said, we're smart. We're smart enough to take in this guy who went far and can shoot from far. So that's it. But enough about the local teams, right? Let's make fun of the SEC. They are so bad that you expect Nick Saban to whine about it. That's how bad they are. Go whine to Congress. Nick, they can't be my... The SEC is 3-5. The SEC lost 5 of its first 6 games in the tournament. So you have to wonder, why did the tournament committee pick 8 teams from a football conference? Don't they know the difference? Number 3, Kentucky. Third seed of Kentucky got upset by number 14, Oakland. Come back to that in a minute. Number 6, South Carolina goes down to number 11, Oregon, led by a former South Carolina player who scored 40 points. Number 8, Mississippi State, blown out by the Izzos, the 9th seeded Izzos. And number 7, Florida, got beaten at the buzzer on a wonderful Kawhi Leonard-like 3 from the corner by Colorado. And then there is number 13, Yale, beating number 4, Auburn. Yale, do you hear me? Naperville's John Pulakidas, the lefty shooting guard, shot a ton, 28 points in 36 minutes. The coach of Auburn, who just got upset and just got pantsed and just got beat, is Bruce Pearl. So Illini fans are doubly happy going into today's game. Jeff Schultz, who I worked with out in L.A., and you most recently read of The Athletic in Atlanta, tweeted out something I think every Illini fan can applaud. Every time Bruce Pearl loses, an angel gets its wings. That's wonderful. Parents, explain Bruce Pearl to your kids so you can understand the hate, the level of hate, the disgust with Bruce Pearl. But Kentucky was the big one. It happened early and loudly and so loud. Oakland coach Greg Campy said calls for Oakland merch crashed the school's website. And after they beat Kentucky, Campy said they sold more than $8,000 worth of stuff to online callers from Louisville zip codes. is so great. Louisville. We're gonna wear all the Oakland stuff. How y'all doing? How y'all doing in Lexington? How y'all doing? And you may remember the name. Sometimes it seems like more of a blip. Some of these names go on and on. Like Bryce Drew, right? Was the right? You remember that name? But now it seems like everything's so hyper. Jake Golke, right? Do we still know him? Do we still remember him going all the way back to Thursday, right? He shot a ton. He shot 30 points, 10 for 20 from threes, and it an unbelievable performance. And in this new era, prepare to cry, Nick Saban. Prepare to whine to Congress. Jake Golke, before his second game in the NCAAs for Oakland, has a commercial running. It's TurboTax. It's out. It's running like 24 hours after he rained down 30 on Kentucky. And in the new era of name, image, likeness, and all the money the kids can make, it was shot in a hotel ballroom. That's how they shot the TurboTax, with him acting like he's shooting jump shots and doing this from distance. And it's shot during the NCAA tournament between games. And Jake Golke is your TurboTax spokesman for the weekend. I love this. How about you, Nick Saban? You like all this? After Oakland upset John Calipari in Kentucky, the inimitable Jay Cuda tweeted out, this was a hand-drawn graphic. Jay does these really well. As opposed to pick a type, pick a font, pick a size, do this and state your information, Jay does some of his most spectacular work with hand-drawn and colors as though he's doing colored pencils or crayons. So this is a hand-drawn graphic titled NCAA Tournament Wins in the 2020s. Farley Dickinson, long dash, 2. Oral Roberts, long dash, 2. Kentucky, long dash, 1. But now it can all be updated. This was done like Thursday night, Friday morning. Now it can be updated. Now he could do another one. Now we can all do it. John Calipari in the 2020s has 1 tournament win. Chris Collins has 2. Go you Cats. And now we're right back where we started from. All sports are local. Now, if you want to know how local, we discussed this earlier with Tony Andracki of MarqueeSportsNetwork.com, and Justin Steele got hit on the knee yesterday, came out of the game. You don't know, oh my God, he's our opening day starter. What's going to happen? Well, he tweeted out, I'm okay, my bracket is not. What a wonderful turn. But my favorite cross-sport NCAA story, my favorite Cubs NCAA tournament story involves Andre Dawson, who you've heard of, and former Cubs trainer John Fierro, who you probably haven't, Tyler. You don't know who John Fierro is, no. Former Cubs trainer. So Fierro had won the tournament 2 years in a row. Cubs had a team tournament, right? Everybody plays the back, pays their money, fills out the bracket. There you go. Fierro wins it. So the third year, during spring training, as we see now, Fierro is standing in the clubhouse at the table where all the bracket sheets are, and he's staring down looking at the sheets, and from behind comes a giant whoop. It is a bundled wad of bills that had been slammed down on the table from behind. And before Fierro can turn around to see what's going on, Andre Dawson is in his ear. And in Dawson's customary spare elegance, he says, I pay, you pick, we split. And then Dawson walks away. And Fierro had a partner. And they won. The end. My favorite Cubs brackets story. We'll take a break. There are other NCAA stories to discuss. Games to be played. Ryan Horvath, co-host of BetMGM. You can find that on the Odyssey app. He will be here, one of my favorite guests. We'll be here to talk NCAA tournaments and investments. And there you go. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Saturday Suckage, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Suckage indeed. I'm Steve Rosenblum. Welcome and welcome back. Top of the hour. Talk with Ryan Horvath, co-host of BetMGM tonight. A whole bunch of games the whole weekend of NCAA sports betting. So we'll talk to him about that. And in keeping on brand with Suckage, 224 texter lets me know, Justin Jones signed with the Arizona Cardinals, which I knew when I was thinking of Christian Wilkins. While I said he signed with Luke Getsy's Raiders, and I'm just, Christian Wilkins was the guy I thought, wow, if that were the, if you didn't like your three technique, that's the guy to go anyway. That's a defensive tackle that you go anyways. So I suck. And 847 texter, I thought the three technique referred to the number of new stadium proposals the Bears made with none coming to fruition.
Three technique. It's something, it's a newer type of situation.
Yeah. And an old story of the Bears trying to play poker, and what you read in the Sun-Times today is a really good fairy tale. Not that the Sun-Times didn't report it accurately, but the Bears' idea is a fairy tale. It seems to have been drummed up by Vice President, new Vice President in charge of Legos, Kevin Warren. All right, moving right along. NCAA, it's on now. It's on. It'll be forever. I love so much of this, not really the basketball, but the stories that come out of it. Illinois plays for a Sweet 16 spot tonight. They will play Duquesne. And Duquesne was the winner of the lame duck coach game, because there was that. They beat Long Beach State. Long Beach State was the one where the coach was the fire. What? Long Beach, Duquesne beat.
Arizona beat Long Beach State.
There we go.
Duquesne beat BYU.
There we go. I don't know why I thought that was the case. Again, I suck. Thank you, Tyler. Anyways, oh my God. So bad. So Illinois is going to face Duquesne. Duquesne, hello, has won 16 of its last 19. That's good. Just to clarify, it's a good thing. And they're an 11 seed, which is all the rage in this tournament so far. Steve Greenberg of the Sun-Times was writing about what Illinois is going to face. And he said, of Duquesne, this team is all hands, disruption, and chaos at that end of the floor. And it's mighty confident that it can throw the Illini, who score in the mid-80s on average, for a loop. Said guard Kareem Rozier, keeping the game in the low 60s, that's what we do. Two of Duquesne's players, this is why I love the tournament, but not the game. I don't care if they play basketball, if they just bring me good stories. Two of Duquesne's players were on St. Peter's team. That St. Peter's team, yes, the 15th seed that went to the Elite Eight a couple years ago. I love that. And now here they are with Duquesne, which also has the retiring coach storyline. While Illinois has Brad Underwood's face turning into a fist every time they don't start right, and eventually they rip off their opponent's heads. Meanwhile, Northwestern won last night. Go you Cats. They needed overtime, but Cats upset Florida Atlantic 77-65 in overtime. In overtime, the Florida Atlantic was, it was clear. The strategy was, Boo Boo, he's not going to beat us. And he didn't. Langbord did. That's what happened. That's all he did. Ryan Langbord beat. He scored 12 of his 27 points in overtime. And the Cats won by 12. You do the math or let Langbord do it. He's the one going to the Brainiac school. He's a graduate school. Do you know why he's here, Tyler? Do you know why he is at Northwestern?
Yeah, I saw on the broadcast yesterday, he is a graduate transfer from Princeton. And if I'm not mistaken, Princeton went to the Sweet 16 in last year's NCAA tournament.
Right. So why is he here from Princeton? That's the question.
Well, you got me on that one, Rosie. I'm not sure why he's here from Princeton.
Because the Ivy League has a rule that graduate students can't play. That's it. There's your Ivy League. Those wacky brainiacs have decided he can't play, and Northwestern said, we're smart. We're smart enough to take in this guy who went far and can shoot from far. So that's it. But enough about the local teams, right? Let's make fun of the SEC. They are so bad that you expect Nick Saban to whine about it. That's how bad they are. Go whine to Congress, Nick. They can't beat my... The SEC is 3-5. The SEC lost 5 of its first 6 games in the tournament. So you have to wonder, why did the tournament committee pick 8 teams from a football conference? Don't they know the difference? Number 3, Kentucky. Third seed of Kentucky got upset by number 14, Oakland. Come back to that in a minute. Number 6, South Carolina goes down to number 11, Oregon, led by a former South Carolina player who scored 40 points. Number 8, Mississippi State, blown out by the Izzos, the 9th seeded Izzos. And number 7, Florida, got beaten at the buzzer on a wonderful Kawhi Leonard-like 3 from the corner by Colorado. And then there is number 13, Yale, beating number 4, Auburn. Yale, do you hear me? Naperville's John Pulakidas, the lefty shooting guard, shot a ton, 28 points in 36 minutes. The coach of Auburn, who just got upset and just got pantsed and just got beat, is Bruce Pearl. So Illini fans are doubly happy going into today's game. Jeff Schultz, who I worked with out in L.A., and you most recently read of the Athletic in Atlanta, tweeted out something I think every Illini fan can applaud. Every time Bruce Pearl loses, an angel gets its wings. That's wonderful. Parents, explain Bruce Pearl to your kids so you can understand the hate, the level of hate, the disgust with Bruce Pearl. But Kentucky was the big one. It happened early and loudly and so loud. Oakland coach Greg Campy said calls for Oakland merch crashed the school's website. And after they beat Kentucky, Campy said they sold more than $8,000 worth of stuff to online callers from Louisville zip codes. That is so great. Louisville. We're going to wear all the Oakland stuff. How y'all doing? How y'all doing in Lexington? How y'all doing? And you may remember the name. Sometimes it seems like more of a blip. Some of these names go on and on. Like Bryce Drew, right, was the right. You remember that name. But now it seems like everything's so hyper. Jake Golke, right? Do we still know him? Do we still remember him going all the way back to Thursday, right? He shot a ton. He shot 30 points, 10 for 20 from threes, and it an unbelievable performance. And in this new era, prepare to cry, Nick Saban. Prepare to whine to Congress. Jake Golke, before his second game in the NCAAs for Oakland, has a commercial running. It's TurboTax. It's out. It's running like 24 hours after he rained down 30 on Kentucky. And in the new era of name, image, likeness, and all the money the kids can make, it was shot in a hotel ballroom. That's how they shot the TurboTax, with him acting like he's shooting jump shots and doing this from distance. And it's shot during the final, during the NCAA tournament, between games, and Jake Oelke is your TurboTax spokesman for the weekend. I love this. How about you, Nick Saban? You like all this? After Oakland upset John Calipari in Kentucky, the inimitable Jay Cuda tweeted out, this was a hand-drawn graphic. Jay does these really well. As opposed to pick a type, pick a font, pick a size, do this, and state your information, Jay does some of his most spectacular work with hand-drawn and colors as though he's doing colored pencils or crayons. So this is a hand-drawn graphic titled NCAA Tournament Wins in the 2020s. Farley Dickinson, long dash, 2. Oral Roberts, long dash, 2. Kentucky, long dash, 1. But now it can all be updated. This was done right after, this was done like Thursday night, Friday morning. Now it can be updated. Now he could do another one. Now we can all do it. John Calipari in the 2020s has 1 tournament win. Chris Collins has 2. Go you Cats. And now we're right back where we started from. All sports are local. Now, if you want to know how local, we discussed this earlier with Tony Andracki of MarqueeSportsNetwork.com, that Justin Steele got hit on the knee yesterday, came out of the game. You don't know, oh my God, he's our opening day starter. What's going to happen? Well, he tweeted out, I'm okay. My bracket is not. What a wonderful turn. But my favorite cross-sport NCAA story, my favorite Cubs NCAA tournament story involves Andre Dawson, who you've heard of, and former Cubs trainer John Fierro, who you probably haven't, Tyler. You don't know who John Fierro is, no. Former Cubs trainer. So Fierro had won the tournament 2 years in a row. Cubs had a team tournament, right? Everybody plays the back, pays their money, fills out the bracket. There you go. Fierro wins it. So the third year, during spring training, as we see now, Fierro is standing at the in the clubhouse at the table where all the bracket sheets are, and he's staring down, looking at the sheets, and from behind comes a giant whoop. It is a bundled wad of bills that had been slammed down on the table from behind. And before Fierro can turn around to see what's going on, Andre Dawson is in his ear. And in Dawson's customary spare elegance, he says, I pay, you pick, we split. And then Dawson walks away. And Fierro had a partner. And they won. The end. My favorite Cubs brackets story. We'll take a break. There are other NCAA stories to discuss. Games to be played. Ryan Horvath, co-host of BetMGM. You can find that on the Odyssey app. He will be here. One of my favorite guests. We'll be here to talk NCAA tournaments and investments. And there you go. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Saturday Suckage, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.